This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 386, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 386. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Greetings.
We are at fanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read some comics. One of us picks the best one. We're right up on the website. We talk about it on the podcast, along with the other books of the week, other topics of interest. And of course, since this is a review show, there might be spoilers, as if there would be anything to spoil in this week's books. I can't think of anything, but there might be. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause and come back. It'll make everyone happier and healthier. And before I introduce Josh and his pick of the week, I will say this, that I think two picks ago for me, I said that it was like the worst week of comics I had in a long time. That week, compared to this week, looks much better because this week, I think, was the worst week of comics I've had in a long time.
Oof.
Josh has the pick.
Oof.
Yeah.
It was ugly out there.
That's not to say they weren't things that were
sure
fine. There were lots of fines.
When you're doing a pick of the week, you want to have
great.
Some.
You need a great.
You do well. You want to have something to say. You want to be able to pick something out that you can talk about or appreciate in some way that maybe you had not before. When I looked at my very small stack, I looked for other things to read, and there was just nothing out there.
It's weird. It was a weird week. It feels like a fifth week, but it's not. It's
no,
in the middle.
It's middle of this. It sweeps. It should be sweeps.
is that still a thing?
I don't know. I don't. There's not enough people watching anymore, so it doesn't matter. I picked the longest title to type, Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher, Part 1 of 2, by Hall of Fame Eisner inductee Richard Corbin.
It blew my mind when I read your review that in the first line that he's 72 years old.
Yeah, and that was really...
It makes sense, but you don't really think about it. He's been around so long.
I just didn't realize that he was part of that generation. Richard Corbin is an artist who's been around for a long time, it appears. But I tended to think of him as not of this newer generation, maybe a couple back, maybe sort of Walt Simonson's generation, something like that. So Richard Corbin, and he's done this before. This is not the first time he's done adaptations of sort of classics. But if you've been around comics for a little while, you've seen his work here and there. He'll work with he'll do miniseries for the big two every once in a while. I had no idea that he's got that sort of legacy about him, and the thing that belies that is that he's still doing work of a caliber like he always has.
I think that's part of the reason why he feels contemporary is because.
Yeah,
his work is so contemporary, and he's pretty prolific.
And like, it just doesn't look like he's ever stopped. It doesn't look like he's ever slowed down. It doesn't look like his art has ever suffered at all. It's just, he's a great artist, and I was actually really looking forward to this because I remember this story. You know, I remember reading this story when I was younger, but I don't actually remember anything about it other than I liked it, and I know what happens at the very end.
And spoiler alert, like, the house falls down.
Yeah, that's the only thing I remember of it. But I remember reading it like way back, early high school, and going, that was really cool. So it was fun to see what he would do with this. And I was just really impressed by what he turned it into. It felt like I was reading an old issue of like an EC Comics, Tales from the Crypt or something like that. There's a Mag the Hag narrator at the beginning and the end who I do not believe is part of Poe's original. I checked to make sure, but
so for the people who don't remember high school, mm-hmm. Or perhaps haven't entered high school, if you shouldn't be listening, and if you or just never went to high school, perhaps you could refresh their memory about the plot of the story.
A dude is on the way to see his old friend Roderick Usher. He's on it. His name is Alan. He's having a bad trip on the way there. His horse takes off. He gets there at this big, creepy, overgrown house, and when he gets inside, there's pages and pages of sort of silent great storytelling in here, and it, very moody. The whole thing's very moody. And he trips over a bunch of corpses because apparently it has flooded recently, which made the family crypts.
The thing is, if I'm going to your house, yeah, and I end up tripping over not even one corpse, but multiple corpses,
a lot of corpses,
I'm just going to turn around and go home.
I like when he brings it up. He's like, man, I saw some dead bodies in the front. What's up with that? And the guy has to explain, they came for there are other ushers who were buried, and then this the water came up and there's all this fog around. And it reminded me a lot of, the Fall of the House of Usher is like the quintessential gothic haunted house sort of story. But then it also reminds me of the new Hammer film, The Lady in Black, the Daniel Radcliffe movie, which I did not like all that much. But the atmosphere is very similar. This house on the moors, surrounded by, this eerie fog. And there's something not quite right going on with the brother and sister.
There's a brother and sister, Roderick Usher and his sister. I forget her name. And he's
painting, Madeline.
He's painting her. And she's nude, and it's all very—it's very odd. And just there's this pervading sense of creepy that's in there, but also awkwardness at the same time, which make it feel sort of contemporary, also, because awkwardness is sort of feels like a '90s and up thing that we've really just chose to focus on. And the really funny part about this is that Alan, the sort of protagonist, he never speaks up or says anything. He's just got that stiff upper lip thing where he's, he's just like. Well, yeah.
Well, he's genteel, and he's that old thing of he's an observer. He's the narrator of the original tale, right? And then cast into this, it's more noticeable that he's so passive and that he doesn't do that much.
Well, the thing that really impressed me, I guess, is how much is being conveyed visually as opposed to through the text. Mm-hmm. All of that mood stuff, all of the characters' body language and their reactions are captured really well in this style that is like it's like realistic cartoony, meaning that the way that Corbin draws
feels like nothing else.
It has a third dimensional quality to it. It feels rounded. It doesn't feel flat in any way, but it's not a trick. It's just really a level of skill.
I look at his art and feel like they should be made out of clay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
You know, kind of like you're looking at a claymation on paper. There's a quality, a physical quality to his art that's just unusual. And it's, he's a horror legend, and these are the kind of stories. Sure. I mean, I didn't read this, but I feel dumb for not reading it. But
you can still.
I can. That's the thing. I can go back and get it.
Yeah. It's only a two-issue mini, and it's great. It was a lot of fun. It gave me an excuse to sort of look up and find out more about Richard Corbin than I hadn't known. I realized a couple of things. I knew that he'd done that sort of weird Cage miniseries that they did with Marvel Max and Brian Azzarello.
Yes, he did.
I think it's one of the reasons I thought he was younger, because I was like, well, they're not going to choose an old white dude for that.
But I remember they did. I think the first time I saw his art was when he did Hellblazer.
Yeah, and Hellblazer, that Brian Azzarello story about John in prison in America. He drew that. That was my first ever Hellblazer arc and issue. I didn't remember that he was the artist on that. So I was that was a nice little touchstone with me. It's just another one of those. It feels like whenever I end up picking one of these sort of off the rail, off the sort of beaten path dark horse books, I'm just blown away by craft and And that's sort of what happened here. Like, I just really enjoyed the craft of it. And on a week where there wasn't a whole lot of other bombast, it was sort of easy to tuck into this and sort of take time to appreciate it and look at it and sort of just see how well it's done.
It's fun to see a master at work. Yes. I'm more of a newbie, so my introduction to Corbin was with the Conan book, Conan of Samaria, or the Sumerian.
Yeah.
And he did the stuff about Conan's grandfather. So I really liked that, and then to see him in doing more of the Hellboy stuff. He's such a perfect fit just for Dark Horse's whole milieu. I picked up over Christmas, they have a collection of his creepy comics, a nice big hardcover. And it's this huge catalog of work, and there are all these great little short stories. And there's one, it's not even gothic horror. It's about this couple they're trapped. It's sort of that movie, you know, that movie where there's these scuba divers and they come up and their boat is gone and they're being circled by sharks.
Open water. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Open water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very similar premise to that. And it's about the survival story. And then, one of them doesn't make it very far. And so the other one is left with this corpse and the sharks are just swirling around and around, and it gets even darker after that, after he's rescued. He's just an amazing storyteller. And what I really liked is that, as you said, it's not just posed text over imagery. Yes,
I was worried it was going to be that.
Yeah, I was worried about that too. And there's a bit of that in the beginning, but then it stops and it's given over to Corbin just doing visual storytelling.
Yeah,
and
he straight up adapted it. He didn't just illustrate it, which I thought.
Yeah, and there's like dialogue and stuff. It's not just an illustrated prose piece or poem, as it were. So
you can also read this and just feel like you're smart because you're reading literature, which is helpful, I think. I don't want to take away from it and be like, well, it was a crappy week, so it was able to get the win. Like, it was a really good book. You may remember me and Paul, Hellboy in Mexico was one of our favorite issues of that year, and Corbin did that.
Oh, yeah.
Vampire turkeys. it's got great timing, and there's this quality of horror and comedy at the same time, the same thing that people like about old Sam Raimi movies, I think.
It's a really interesting cliffhanger because he kind of softens it with a bit of a joke, with a bit of a pratfall kind of. Instead, that was not what I was expecting, but it just adds to the absurdity of what's going on in this house.
It's absurd.
It's very kind of creepy. It's, yeah. And that's even more unnerving than just straight up gothic scares and black cats and stuff.
Great single issues. There's only two of them. I couldn't recommend it higher in terms of sort of just well made comics.
Now there were it was a rough week, but mostly because there were things that were still good. One of the ones that was still good was Nova number 4, mm-hmm. which I'm continually surprised about how much I'm enjoying this book.
You've been fully on board.
I'm fully on board. Paul, are you still reading this?
Yeah, I'm still reading this.
I love this character. I think he's fun. And I always like the young superheroes who actually seem to enjoy being superheroes. You know, I think there's a nice tonic to the dark, you know, sort of angsty, you know, wave we've been in for 30 years. This Sam Alexander kid's fun. He's running around. He's flying through space. He's fighting the Chitauri. He's
taking lessons from video games because he's the generation that has grown up on playing shooters and space combat stuff. And so he actually employs that knowledge from the formulaic space adventure games that he's played to try and destroy a Chitauri vessel. He's like, okay, I gotta take out the mothership. Or like he could have been one of the kids who saw. Marvel's The Avengers, and those that once you take out the mothership, everything else falls over. And so I don't know if that was a little bit of a commentary on that, but it was kind of funny. And he runs into one of his dad, the former Nova's supposed comrades,
his partner,
his Nova partner. Troop in the black What is
Black Core?
Black Core, right? Yeah. And it's Titus, the white tiger kind of dude. And apparently, Dad maybe got some of the facts wrong or gelled over some things in his narrative to the boy. So Titus doesn't remember old Dad so fondly and is ready to gut the kid.
And the Ultimate Nullifier shows up. I think this is just super fun. And you know, the kid's got the Ultimate Nullifier now. He doesn't really quite understand what he's got in his possession, and he's a young kid, which could be problematic. This is just that kind of old Marvel storytelling, in that you've got a new person finding their powers, figuring out this whole crazy world, being dropped in the middle of this cosmic battle, and being given abilities and weapons that are far beyond his comprehension.
Yeah, I'm reading it and I'm like, this would be a great animated series. Like, I'd love to watch something like this on the Cartoon Network or whatever.
They're totally setting this up for something, because
they got to be doing something.
If only there was some connection to the TV department.
If only Jeff Loeb was in charge of all of Marvel TV.
But I mean, it's just lighthearted. It's got the great colorful cast, all the different aliens, the vehicles and stuff. They could make shitloads of toys out of this stuff. But it just feels like that kind of book and of a high quality.
And the Ed McGuinness art is just wonderful for this story.
We got the creative team change coming up.
Right, so. And that's what I'm going to bail, because I really
you're just going to bail. You're not going to try it, or
probably bail.
There is a Loeb McGuinness magic.
Yeah, there really is. They work together.
Is the whole creative team changing, or just?
I believe it's Paco Medina is doing the art.
It's okay. No, he's fine. It's just there's a magic when these two guys work together, and I think that Loeb does have a handle on this character pretty well, and it's fun.
I've liked some Zeb Wells Spidey stuff, so I'll check it out at least.
Maybe I'll take one issue, but we'll see.
It is sad to see this ending so quickly in terms of this run.
Right, but I also wasn't surprised to see that either. That's just the way it is. The book I would have probably made the pick was Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 23. The one thing I liked about this was that they jumped ahead a year. We got the last issue ended with Miles' mother dying, and now we've jumped ahead to 1 year past that event, and we don't have to dwell in it. And this is one of the things I wish they'd do in Batman. Is just jump ahead and not deal with all the craziness, and you get a little bit.
Yeah,
older.
No, and they don't ignore it. I mean, it's definitely
it's a given up. It's a heavy factor in his life.
He's given up being Spider-Man, but everyone else kind of doesn't want him to have done that.
And he's dating Kate Bishop, and who has a red streak in her hair, and he is being hounded by Jessica Drew to be Spider-Man again, and he's hanging out with his dad. It's still kind of awkward. And
remind me, in Jessica Drew in this universe, this is the clone of Peter Parker?
She's the clone of Peter Parker, yeah.
Okay. So, there's definitely an image where she pulls off her mask and is like, whoa, that is Peter with a wig.
That's what Peter looked like most of the series.
Right.
And one thing I was thinking about with this book is Bendis is a fan of the long runs. He did a long run on Avengers. He did a long run on Daredevil. He's doing a long run on Ultimate Spider-Man. And this is the only book of his that it hasn't gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, it's time to hand the reins over to somebody else. Like, he still creates a super compelling story with these characters. And maybe because he basically, gutted the cast and started with a new character.
I don't think that was a bad idea.
That doesn't feel stale, but it doesn't feel stale. It feels compelling and interesting, and the characters are wonderful. And the fact that he's been able to write these characters for, 13 years now really gives them a depth. And, obviously not Miles, but Gwen is in this book, and he's been writing her for that long. And it just feels like a very well thought-out universe, full of characters that he really understands. And it's
I really like all the character interaction. I mean, throughout, it's just a whole bunch of just Miles interacting with different people and figuring out where they are after a year, and then, how they feel about him not doing this anymore, or what they know and what they don't know. And, that goes along with his dad. And I really like their interaction, too. Like, we're going to go to a Chinese restaurant and going to get something to eat. And then he bumps into a girl that he, used to know. But it's complicated because this is Gwen. And how does he explain Gwen to his dad? And then dad's just like, kid's got game all of a sudden.
Because he's got women coming.
I really like that panel. Yeah. And he's just looking at the menu and just being a proud dad or whatever. And
seriously, though, how many pretty blonde girls?
Let him do the thing.
How many pretty blonde girls work in Chinese food places in New York City? Because that is not a native writing that. Because no one who'd lived there would ever put that together.
That's true. But she had to be there. She had to work in there somehow. So
they
who knows?
They could have been somewhere else, I'm saying.
Okay. But No, this is just wonderful. The character interaction is just great.
I agree with you on that. This was probably, if I hadn't made the pick of the week that I did make the pick of the week, this would have been it.
Mm.
But it's still, I'm still smarting from the, like, I feel like we're kind of treading familiar ground over and over, just giving you names of people who exist in other things. And while it is compelling, there's something about it that's lacking in originality or something I don't even know, because I've said it before in a lot of the things, but for some reason it left a bad taste in my mouth when they are trying to recreate everything instead of making a new thing, but they're not really. I don't know.
I don't see the creation of Peter at all in this.
I think this is forward momentum from Ultimate Peter. I mean,
sure.
Ultimate Peter, I think what you're saying is more true, because that's, you know, a direct, you know, one-to-one kind of thing with a few differences. Mm-hmm. With this, it's your, you know, Peter didn't have a previous Spider-Man that he had to live up to that legacy or not make the same mistakes or interact with his, you know, friends and loved ones. And that's what kind of makes this interesting. The other thing is, I haven't read all of the issues of this, and I found it true even when he was writing Peter, just the regular Ultimate Spider-Man, that if I would just drop the book for a few months and then come back, it would feel fresh again. And maybe that's part of why this is refreshing to me, because the previous issue was my first in a while. Mm-hmm. So it felt like new territory to me.
The fact is true. I've never been bored with a single issue of this.
Mm-hmm.
For however many.
13 years.
Yeah, I mean, so that's definitely something.
It's also gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, really, just, yes. You know, Sarah Pacelli basically drew an issue of people talking. Yeah, I know that's the Bendis joke, but this is the issue basically where...
He was very Bendis-y in this one.
He's trying to decide whether or not to be Spider-Man again. Obviously, he will be, but, you know, so it's mostly just him talking to people about
it. Yeah, I mean, this is like pinball word balloons. I mean, you got to, like, trace about, like, okay, who's talking in this one? All right, and then you go back and...
It's old-school Bendis in the best way.
But no, I really
does continue to be a great book. And the thing is, 13 years, we got, you know...
That's a heck of a run.
And we were all ready for him to move. And then move on. But 13 years out of this, he still has this world at his fingertips pretty well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we'll come back to that in one of the questions later. Another thing I wanted, unusual release, but it's a light week, and it's a good buddy of ours, Gabe Hardman, released a book digitally this week called Kinski Number One. And I'm not entirely sure what to make of it. It was not what I expected, but I wasn't sure what to expect.
It's Taxi Driver with a dog. Sort of, it's like, that's the thing.
I guess
I don't know exactly where it's headed, but it's basically this guy who's disgruntled or maybe a little unhappy with his job. He's Gabe said on Twitter that this guy is missing something in his life. And, mm-hmm. but he works for a chicken feed company, feed stock. Company, yeah, and he's a rep for that kind of thing, and he comes across this puppy dog one day, and he's gonna claim it as his own, and you know, people come out from work or whatever, and like, oh, who's the dog? Who I'll take it if you know you don't want it or whatever, and he makes this scary face like, no, he's mine, and you're like, what? That is just a weird turn, because up until then it was this very sweet story, this guy finding a dog, then later on. The police take the dog away, and because they want to put him up in a shelter, and they give, you know, the original owners time to come and claim the dog, and you know, if they don't, what's going to happen to the dog? So he's preoccupied with this the entire day, and all through a meeting and stuff, and kind of botches his job, and then he goes and is going to try to claim this dog as his own, but it's already been claimed. He goes after the original owner, he figures out through the sign-in sheet who the original owner is, who picked up the dog, and he's going to go find it. And basically, he steals the dog in the night. So it's like this story of kind of obsession. It's like a Taxi Driver one-hour photo kind of character to me. That's what it felt like.
I remember thinking ahead of time, like, how's he going to do this? Like, how's he going to fit it in? These are full-length stories. This one's 23 pages. And then you get through it and you go, oh, I see. It's all a very sort of rigid six-panel grid and sort of working within that feature. And the art is a little stripped down Not in a bad way.
Paul, this is your second Monkey Brain book, right? You talked about one before.
Yeah.
Is it the format the same for the? Are they doing whatever they want?
Seems like they're doing whatever they want. I could be wrong about that. I'm only looking at the two, but they're two very different things.
Yeah, no, the format.
That one was painted.
I feel like this is just.
No, I mean more like, is it landscape mode? Is it comic?
The regular comics. These are all made
portrait.
To be put into graphic novels later. It's just they're releasing them this way first.
Okay.
I don't know. It just felt like a black and white comic book to me. I mean, I didn't really. I mean, you're right about the grid layouts and stuff, but I thought it was like really beautiful stuff from Gabe. I thought like maybe just because it's so minimal, mm-hmm. It looks a little even better than the Star Wars book.
That's not a criticism. Like it was a different kind of style. And it almost felt like, and I know because we know him and what he talks about, it felt like a classic movie. It felt like a movie from a really long time ago. And by sticking with a really rigid grid and sticking with these parameters, it has this ongoing pace. There's not a ton of detail. You're just moving through this thing really quick, and it's fairly straightforward.
It was very clear. Like, it's like I completely got it. I just, I ate it up. Like, it was just very easy to read. I thought it was like the storytelling, the expression was perfect, just spot on. And I'm a dog person, so I'm interested to see where it goes. And I like that I kind of have no idea what issue two is. Like, I don't know if this is going to be like Dog Day Afternoon and this guy is going to have a gun at some point. Like, I don't know. But it's not Nintendo Dogs. This isn't like, cute, happy. That something is going a little bit awry here.
I like that.
And I'm excited to see where that goes.
But it's picking up. It's a buck.
If you'd like to buy some great products for your dog, I would recommend not going to one of those boutique shops that you see, because those never last. They come up for like a couple months and then they're gone. And
massive
then
markup.
Yeah. So I would recommend going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Which is your portal, your gateway to the wonderful world of Amazon, where you can buy Vita coconut water and puppy products and saxophones and...
Can you buy puppies?
Movie replicas. I don't think you can buy dogs. You could probably buy like an aftermarket Tamagotchi kind of a situation, mm-hmm. like a virtual pet. You could buy Nintendo dogs. That's what you could do.
As opposed to an aftermarket Tamagotchi? As opposed to...
like a brand new one?
Yeah.
I don't think they sell those anymore.
I believe somebody's making them.
I think they're under a different name, though. I don't think anybody calls
them.
You could get a Furby.
That you could do. It's basically the same thing as a pet. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the Furby is. I mean, it's one step removed from even having a human child. I'm led.
You know what's fun? Read the product reviews on a Furby. Because there are parents who are like, I can't get the Furby to shut up. It's doing weird things. Help me out. And then people responding to each other. It's great.
It just seems like playing The Sims.
Yeah, The Sims.
It really does.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
I got enough stress in my life.
There's a new version of The Sims coming out. You could get that.
No, we. Oh, others could. Yeah, that's fine. If you want simulated stress to add to the regular stress of your life, go for it.
You want it in the box. Don't go to Steam, because we don't have a Steam portal.
Can you still buy World of Warcraft 3?
Not World of Warcraft 3.
There is no such thing as World of Warcraft.
I mean, Warcraft 3.
You must be able to.
Digitally, yeah.
Because, okay.
You lost your disc?
It's asking for a friend, that's all. He wanted me to ask, make sure.
It's great on my new computers. Because it was developed 15 years ago.
Oh, God.
So even
anyway.
A computer now.
Anyway, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Make that your bookmark. It helps us out. It doesn't cost you anything, and we appreciate it.
That was a diversion.
I just saw the whole coming, and I realized that was a bad way to go, because I'm stuck on that level where you have to survive for 30 minutes.
I'm wondering if my computer can actually handle playing that in one window while I talk to you.
it woo.
I bet it could.
I bet you could too. Anyway, let's get back to the music. Just League of America's vibe. And before, Paul, I feel the same way about Nova. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I am. I like the main character a lot. Mm-hmm. I think he is interesting. I like the fact that he's basically being used as a puppet by the government and he doesn't like it. and actually says stuff about it. It's very skeptical of this entire operation, but it's still at the same time very happy to be a superhero. You know, so he can't completely, you know, push back against the government who are allowing him to be a superhero and be on the Justice League. But at the same time, he's like, this isn't right what we're doing. This is not cool.
That sounds entirely reasonable. But despite all intentions to the contrary, I'm not reading it. I don't know what happened with that sentence. no, I was going to read this series after the first issue, and I just didn't. So you're on your own with this one.
That's fine. And this issue, Gypsy shows up. Gypsy is a old Justice League of America character, Justice League Detroit character, and she's a person from another dimension. So they sent Vibe to find her, because Vibe, much like the characters on Fringe, can see characters from other dimensions as glowing light, and so he has to help her. And then at the end, he finds out she's hot because he only sees her as a
surprise that got through, because it's kind of a racially insensitive name.
Gypsy. Well, Gypsy is a thing. I mean, it is a name.
But yeah, but I wouldn't. Is she a gypsy?
She's a character from another dimension. I don't know anything about her beyond that.
Maybe it's not offensive in those other dimensions.
She's a metaphorical. I don't know.
No,
I
didn't. Anyway, I'm enjoying this. It's issue 4. I'll give it another 3 before it's canceled.
Where do you come up with these numbers?
Just guessing.
Okay.
Actually, the books that DC have canceled have lasted a bit longer.
No, it's not. It won't. It'll make it past 7.
I'll say 9 to 10.
Yeah.
I got another 6 months out of it.
You're good.
Yeah.
You're good. You're fine.
In the meantime, Dream Merchant number one.
The Dream Merchant number one. This was a big book. Yes.
Paul? This was. It doesn't look like it, and it doesn't seem like it. But this is Nathan Edmondson's new series or mini series from Image Comics with an artist.
Why doesn't it look like that?
His books don't tend to look like that. His books have been.
Oh, you say it doesn't look like a Nathan Edmondson book.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It just his books are all of his books seem to have been straight up sort of military or spy sort of on the run
thrillers. Things. Yeah,
and this is actually exactly that, but half of it taking place in the Dream.
How dare he be well rounded?
Except
it's true. He should stick in that box that we put him in and never leave it.
But here's my complaint.
Okay.
It's exactly the same story as the other ones.
Stay in the box.
It's
stay
just
in the box.
With the Dream people as opposed to the mysterious CIA people. It really
is.
How is
it the same story?
That he meets a girl. They end up on the run together. It's the same thing as Dancer. It's the same thing as Jake Ellis.
Oh, okay, Dancer,
He's done this. This is the third time he's done this story.
Okay.
And it was well done. Here's my problem. I have a well-known distaste for Dream sequences and
as do I, and we're going to talk about another one.
Yeah, exactly. That there's a reason that book comes next. And just sort of the hallucination part of getting through telling a story. You know, it's well constructed. It's fine. If you like stuff like this, you might like it, but it's very familiar in tone to the other story. It is great looking. I love this art in this book.
Yeah, this is really neat. This I'm hard pressed to describe it. The only thing, the characters themselves are like these tall, lanky, sort of like the people in the 101 Dalmatians movies, mm-hmm. the Disney one, the animated
it
one.
It reminds me of Don Bluth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit.
So a little bit of those things.
Novazadov. Is the artist on that. It's a really, like, it's a beautiful, well-produced book. It's fine. I just don't like dream sequences, and it feels, at the end of the day, very familiar.
You know,
people are chasing me. I don't know why. Come with me, girl.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of that, but it, I'm at least interested in the next one because it's so beautiful, and I kind of like that. I don't like dream sequences either, but I like that it's about a guy who has trouble distinguishing between dreams and reality, and it's not just about him. Wait, you know, being in a dream,
that's true.
Being in a dream world, it's that, you know, in having an incursion into his regular life, and it's kind of a neat setup. He lives in a, you know, mental hospital, and so there's a bit of the unreliable narrator thing going on, which could always get interesting, or it could get really obnoxious. So this one could go either way, but I like the art a whole lot. Yep. And I like the character too. Like he's not an asshole. There's a lot of characters who are assholes these days.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of like this gentle guy who has this horrible situation he has to deal with where he can't stay in touch with reality, and he's latched on to something in this girl and this pursuit that keeps him a little sharper, or hopefully. But
is Conan the Barbarian an asshole?
Yeah, but historically, we always kind of get around with that.
Is he a pragmatist?
In this book, he's not much of an asshole.
Same thing.
He's haunted by the deaths of the people who. This is another hallucination book. They're in.
Conan the Barbarian 16.
Yeah, they're in some sort of sex house, and somebody comes and gives him a pill. No, because he's with his girlfriend. He's with Belit.
Wait, if it's not a brothel and it's a sex house.
I assume there are also whores there, but they also.
It's a sex party. It's,
yeah. Oh, it's an orgy.
It's like the ice storm.
They have a room, though.
Oh, it's a swingers. It's a key party.
Sort of, but they don't have keys.
Well, they have their horses, right? It's like a rain party.
Dude comes around
party.
With a
flower. Yeah, a bowl full of reins.
Or something, and they're tripping balls the whole day.
Whose leather reins are these?
They're basically. It's this whole like ecstasy thing, and that. But like the guy comes in, he's like, "I got the great, old world drugs."
Something Lotus.
You want it? Yellow Lotus, yeah. I believe. They're sort of like it's like an opium den, but like sexy.
Yeah.
You know they were doing that back then in the barbarian times.
Yeah. Sure,
yeah. So
it was like, it was a hallucination
body.
Episode. It was like when the Sopranos did it, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah, and there was a bit more prose than I like in this. You know, it's the opposite of what Corbin was doing in the Edgar Allan Poe book. I sometimes like the way Wood integrates.
I'm impressed by
Robert E. Howard's prose. Yeah, usually this one there's just a ton of it, and it's you're not latched onto anything. They're in different dream worlds and falling into things. And I mean, if that's your thing, then
the whole point is to tell you that he feels bad that he picked up his girlfriend when he was on a ship of a bunch of other people who were all killed except for him, and then he starts dating the lady who killed them all.
Right, so he's having the sexy times on the drugs, and he's having a good time. But then, like, it's ruined by corpses, like reanimated corpses of his old friends or whatever people that he slighted to get to where he is. And then, like, a kid runs in, and like that ruins the mood all the time. So
also, part one of two, so we get to do this again.
Right,
it's not over.
The art's good.
Yep, sure.
I like the art.
I guess. Speaking of great art, I think that Ramon Perez has come around on.
Yeah, Wolverine and the X-Men 29. Yeah, I think this is the best issue he's done.
Oh, yeah.
By far. I think he's gotten a hold of the world and characters. I don't know if this is his last issue, probably, but
I feel like there's a little more to do. But I don't know.
I have no idea. I just know that he was only supposed to do a short run on it, and he's not doing the cover next issue.
Yeah. This information is probably out there. We're not going to look it up.
No. Well, we're on the show. We can't be stopping to do some Googling on the show.
No.
The guy who's used to that is gone, so we have to actually pay attention.
If you want, I can put the mic right over my keyboard and bang on it.
I really liked this issue. I like...
What did you like about it?
I always like time travel stories, and I always like seeing the future. You know, those are always my favorite parts of stories. Is when you get a glimpse to see where these characters are going to end up. You know, of course, nothing's set in stone because we'll never actually get there. The only part I didn't like was I didn't feel like Wolverine would have gray hair in 25 years. But
that was an issue. I thought that the whole time. I was like, well, how come he's suddenly aging?
Yeah.
Like when they did Old Man Logan, that was a lot further in the future.
Yeah. But other than that,
How long did Logan look like a teenager?
He ages very, very slowly.
Like, does he just get to be, like, was he a teenager-looking person when he was, like, 70, or?
I guess.
I've never really thought about that.
I feel like he made it to, like, that somewhere between 35 and 45 with a fairly high degree of grizzle. It's funny, because he shouldn't look grizzled, but in my mind, because he should look just sort of youthful. He should look like Ultimate Wolverine, but he doesn't.
Maybe. It's not as easy as like a Benjamin Button kind of situation. Like
no, it's
like I think he would probably get to adulthood and then stop aging. Like I think
he's not that he stops. He just he's very slow. So he has aged a bit because he started
right.
With the healing factor would kick in his teens. So he would have gotten normally aging until the healing factor kicked in, and then it would have slowed way down.
So let's say Wolverine settles down. Is he going to be like old like forever? Like Mrs. Britt, who used to live across the street from me, who was old for as long as I've been alive.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because that would be awful. And they just have the claws.
Yeah. It's bad. Anyway, I did like the way this issue looked a lot, though. I thought it was very good. I'm looking forward to the idea that they're setting up this anti-team with everybody. You know, they stole the Hellfire Club is setting up the Hellfire Academy with Heidi. They stole Heidi. I'm calling her Heidi. Heidi. Damn. And Dog, Wolverine's brother, who...
well, I guess will be filling Wolverine's role. So they're sort of filling up sort of the old X-Men style.
It's bold to bring in a character from that book.
From Origins?
Yeah. Yeah, but there you go.
So those were the books from this week. Not many of them. We talked about almost all the ones I get anything to say about. You can go to fanboy.com/comics. You can see everything that came out. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review books. And you can also choose your own pick of the week. And we like to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience. And we have a no consensus again this week. Didn't we have one no last week either?
Was I on last week or was that the week before?
I don't remember.
Who knows?
What's happening to us? It's not even hot.
No, there wasn't. No, we talked about Thor and there was like a lot of people chose Thor.
But it was like 38% or something like that, wasn't it?
I don't know.
It was not a quorum. Anyway.
These could change. So.
Yeah, these numbers could change at the time of recording. They probably will. They definitely will because it's math. And math is always evolving.
Math is fluid.
Wonder Woman 20, 6% of the votes. Number 4, Wolverine and the X-Men 29 with 8.8% of the votes. Number 3, Fatale 14 with 12.7% of the votes. Number 2, Supergirl. Number 20, a surprise number 2, 15.4% of the votes. Something big must have happened in that issue.
I feel like somebody should have read that.
Number 1, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 23, 28.1% of the votes. So, Nice spread there. And the thing is, you can tell on the show when we've had a long week. This is one of those shows.
Really?
I apologize. We're all
Hey, whoa. Where are the books I suggested to talk about?
What do you mean?
They're none of the books that I suggest. Go ahead.
Really?
I said we should talk about regular show number 1 and Battlestar Galactica number 1, and they're not on the left. That's fine. That's fine.
You're
it's all right.
Right.
Neither of them were fantastic.
No, you know what? I'm breaking format. Tell me about Battlestar Galactica. So I was Abnett and Lanning.
It was all right.
There you go. I was like, I should read that. And then I saw two things. I saw A, that it was original Galactica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which doesn't interest me. And two, I saw that it was a Dynamite book. So I figured it would look ugly.
It is. It does look ugly. And there's only one image of Daggett, the crazy cybernetic dog, mm-hmm. that doesn't figure into the updated Battlestar Galactica. I was interested. I was like, it's classic Battlestar Galactica, which I watched as a kid on, I guess it was on the Sci-Fi Channel or something. And it's, you know,
when Paul was a kid, they had the Sci-Fi Channel.
Jesus. When I was a kid, we had black and white TV.
It was before it was called Sci-Fi. And I watched Robot Carnival on Saturdays, the anime stuff. All right. And it was good. It looks like it's time displaced. So Starbuck and Apollo, who are both dudes, it's not the girl Starbuck, went into, they have like time displacement weapons. And I was like, oh shit, this isn't going to go well. And they go out to use those against the Cylons. And then they go into a portal and the last page is like, where are we? When are we? What are we? But there could have been more Daggett.
All right. And the other one?
Regular show had a talking raccoon and a talking blue jay. This is one of those Cartoon Network shows like Adventure Time. And it's a little bit more sedate. I've only seen a little bit of it on TV, and they go to a concert. It's outdoors, and they're working there, and they're picking up the garbage, and then the raccoon's eating the hot dogs, and the blue jay's like, that's weird. Don't do that. And it's a folk concert, and this muscly guy goes, and he's all green. He goes up, and he's like, let's have a mosh pit, but it's a folk concert. You can't have a mosh pit at a folk concert, and he forces a mosh pit upon the partygoers. And it opens a rift into hell because it's like this weird discord between folk and rock. And it's a cliffhanger.
All right. Well, there you go. Those are the books Paul wanted to talk about this week.
You're welcome.
That's my fault. There's
what
just,
happens
there's
is
a script problem.
Is you're experiencing a show put together by a guy running on no sleep for 4 days.
Yeah, the fucking turkeys woke me up, man.
So there you go. Now let's check out some user reviews. If you go to fanboy.com/comics, you can, in addition to making your pull list and rating and picking your picks of the week, you can also write a user review. The first one is Scarlet Batman reviewed Age of Ultron number 8. Give a story a 5 out of 5, art a 4 out of 5. Pick a week percentage was 0.5%. Scarlet Batman says, this is the payoff I've been waiting for. We get action, adventure, plot, intrigue, excitement. What more could a guy ask for? My only regret is that Age of Ultron wasn't The Adventures of Logan and Sue from the get-go. Seriously, it could be like Sliders, but way better. Someone needs to write that. It'd be like printing money. The art was top-notch, especially the ending battle with Morgan Le Fay.
He really liked it. You know what's funny is that I listened to the show that I wasn't on with Ryan, and they were you were talking about Age of Ultron, and I was like, that sounds all right. I was like, I should go back and check that out. So that's why that's in there. I was like, well, this guy might be too. I could.
You're not gonna, though. You could, but you're not.
I won't.
Parker 13 instead of Fatale number 14. Story of 4 out of 5. Art of 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage, nope. Fatale has only gotten better since it started. The flashback issue reveals how Joe and Walt met back in World War II, and it's full of creepy abandoned churches and shootouts with Nazi occultists. It's surprising how these four standalone stories haven't derailed the story, but only increased the mythology of the universe. I can't wait to get back to the cliffhanger from the second arc's end, but these four stories have kept me happy in the meantime.
Standalone stories serve a purpose.
You know, it's the Lovecraft thing. I'm tired and I can't do it.
That's why none of us are reading it, right?
I feel like I'm starting to feel like I missed it. Although if it is the Lovecraft thing, which I really didn't like in the first one.
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't really interest me. It's not the kind of story that I'm interested in.
I like those two creators working together, and I want to like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I might check it out in like a collection or something, but just like Nazi occultists, and I have enough of that in Hellboy. Like I'm fine with that. So I don't need any more. Yeah.
There you go. You got fanboy.com/comics every week. Make your pull list, rate it, and review books. And if they're good and they're about books we don't want to talk about at the top, and if they're early enough in the week, there's a lot of conditions to get your review in the week. So should always be proud of yourself if you get on there, because you got to jump through a lot of hoops. Let's do some audience questions. Josh, kick it off.
Sean writes in and said, I see Ultimate Comics on the shelf, and there seem to be some large story arc that's been going on for the past year based on similar covers. I read Ultimate Spider-Man and some of the Ultimates, and I was turned off by both. The former because it seemed to be rehashing Spidey tropes, and the latter when the characters sat around talking about who would play them in a movie.
That was a long time ago.
I guess.
That was the original story.
What's happening in the Ultimate Comics? I know that Ultimate Peter Parker died and Ultimatum just screwed up everything. Beyond that, I've got nothing. That was a long time ago.
Was Ultimatum the Flood?
Yes.
Yeah. Jesus, that was...
It was a really long time ago.
That was a while ago.
And the story he's talking about is from the 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Ultimate Spider-Man the Ultimate. So he wants to sum up 13 years of Ultimate.
What's happened since then?
But what I can tell you is that this is interesting because the question made me think, like, wait, what happened to Ult? Is there – I feel like at this point there's only the Ultimates and Ultimate Spider-Man. Are there other
– There's Ultimate X-Men too.
Ultimate X-Men.
But the bigger question is I feel like there was a point to the Ultimate line 13 years ago. I don't think there's a point to it anymore.
This is what I'm getting at is that now I feel like it's vestigial. And when Bendis decides to stop doing Ultimate Spider-Man – I don't see that all continuing.
It just 13 years ago, there was a very different comic book world. Marvel needed these stories. They needed to freshen things up. They needed to clean the slate, and they got these guys who were relatively unknown. I mean, Bendis was not Bendis when 13 years ago, and so there was a point to it. It was interesting, exciting.
It was to bring in new readers, like younger kids, and start on this is your Spider-Man. Because we had a Spider-Man, you know, for all these decades. It was introduced in the 60s. Now this is your turn.
But also we'll 13 years ago, Amazing Spider-Man wasn't very good. And the Spider-Man books weren't very good.
That was really the thing.
The biggest problem was the books weren't good. They were. This was still coming out of that bankrupt period, sort of restarting the company, and the books weren't good. They had to start something new. They couldn't reboot continuity. Marvel Zombies would freak, so they had to do this, and it
but
worked.
But now it's so far removed from like what they can do in the movies and in animation stuff. I mean, they can't do anything in live action. Marvel themselves, so
Marvel does all that stuff themselves.
Does what?
The movies and the TV shows. Marvel runs all that stuff.
Yeah, but it's not Marvel Studios.
Yeah, they are.
Cartoons are.
All of it are.
The live-action Spider-Man isn't part of
Marvel. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Spider-Man. No, but the cartoons are.
That's what I'm saying. The cartoons are. But I'm just talking about the live-action thing. They can't. Mm-hmm. So they can't co-opt that. They can't take advantage of, you know, that stuff in the movies.
Mm-hmm. They can release the Ultimate Spider-Man movie.
The point is, it doesn't seem to be, there's no reason for it. The one book's really good.
Well, Miles is a new start. I mean, Miles is a new start. That's like going back to 13 years ago. And so you can say kids now can pick up.
But in the same token, there's no reason why it has to be an Ultimate Spider-Man. They had you know, they did Spider-Man 2099 alongside Amazing Spider-Man. You know, they're just different Spider-Man stories. There's no reason for the line, I don't think, anymore.
The other thing that he'd asked about also, though, we're not going through all the continuity, but the big thing that did happen was that there was a big civil war in the United States.
Captain America president?
Basically, the upshot of it was that Captain America became voted president, and AIM was behind the whole thing, or Hydra, or AIM and Hydra.
I really enjoyed that joke in Spider-Man about how...
it was a Lego.
Yeah. The Lego set with President Captain America that was rare.
Triskelion.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, Ultimates will be good now and then kind of not. And, you know, like, there's no legacy to it that makes you feel like you have to keep reading it when it's not good. Ultimate Spider-Man has that a little bit, but it's kind of never not good, and I've never been into Ultimate X-Men.
It's just not vital anymore. It doesn't feel... It was a big deal at the time. 13 years on, it just sort of seems like this thing that still exists because of inertia. Yeah, it's inertial.
Yeah.
So there you go, Sean. Let's do a voicemail. We got one asking about a classic character.
Hey, fellas. Sean from New York here. Just curious what your thoughts are on Captain Marvel, and I'm talking Shazam-style Captain Marvel. When he's in the persona, are there two different people? Is it just Billy with the Wisdom of Solomon, like Jeff Johnston, JSA? And also, why do you think this guy can't get his own series and just really go forward with that? There's something about Captain Marvel that doesn't work today. All right, guys. Love to hear what you think.
I hope that's not the same Sean. That would be awkward.
We should do that one day. We should have, like, themed audience questions where the same person gets to ask three questions or something. Yeah. Captain Marvel, when Billy becomes Captain Marvel, it's not like he's too... It's not like there's another person he's entering. He's just growing big.
He doesn't get adult mind, though? Like, doesn't he get...
No, he's got kid mind. That's why he's kind of like... He acts like a kid, because he's just a kid in a man's body.
But doesn't he have, like, the what is it? The wisdom of
he has the... Yeah, but he's still a kid, though, with all that stuff. Right. So he's a wise kid, but ultimately, like... That's why he...
Did he use that?
They don't really
use that. I feel like I've never seen him use that.
He should.
The wisdom part.
But that's why he was in the JSA story. He was hanging out with Stargirls.
Maybe he gets that when he comes of age.
Maybe.
Like, it gets unlocked to him.
But it's not like a Firestorm scenario where he enters a man's body and there's a man in there.
No, and it's not like...
Sounds wrong.
And it's not like Thor either.
Yeah.
The boy
Donald Blake.
And that was the whole conceit of Kingdom Come was that he grew into adulthood mentally.
And there was an episode of Young Justice where all the adults disappeared from reality. Like, there was one reality where the adults were there and the kids were missing, and then vice versa. And by switching back and forth between Captain Marvel and Billy Batson, he was able to go between both worlds and save the day.
Yeah. So that's what that is. Then why can't he succeed with a book? He's a little old-fashioned.
There's a lot of things that can't succeed with their own sort of comic book series now. And I
think he's kind of like Legion.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like a small, he's got a small hardcore base of fans.
Yeah.
Like honestly, obviously, if you put like a A-list creative team on him, he'd succeed like anybody would.
It's also like he has the same time.
Right.
The same criticism that people would level at Superman could be leveled at Shazam now.
But like times 10.
But times 10, but then also, and like, he's not even as popular as Superman, and Superman has enough trouble,
I think,
you know, with his own book.
I think that because he's a kid, I don't feel like he was ever properly adapted into the world that came when comics got dark, when they became for adults. And I feel like that's a...
He's always been a throwback.
Yeah, like there was no way to make him dark because he's a kid. So therefore...
You can't make him in that world and talkie-tawny and those people dark. I think the best you can do is have him be a supporting character in a book like Justice Society, where you can play off the fact that he's sort of a naive kid from a goofy world.
Or you do what Mark Waid did, and he already did it.
But right.
I think that's it. Like you can't put that character into Batman's pain cave.
Yeah, and the thing, like, the Charles Shazam book was good, but it wasn't really the traditional, you know, traditional Shazam fans got pissed off by it.
Right, and so, like, that even that fan base didn't buy it.
Because that's not Billy, right?
It was Captain Marvel Jr. becoming Captain. But the thing was, it was trying to make it more of a modern take, and it just didn't have that feeling.
It was good.
It was a good book. I'm thinking, I'm a big Shazam fan, and you can't call him Captain Marvel anymore. But you know, I don't know that he would work necessarily. You could have a, you know, there's tons of great creators out there who probably have a good idea that could make it work, and maybe they will, but.
Like, I would love, like, you know, like a Roger Langridge, you know.
Right, the only way to,
that's like sort
of
Shazambo.
That's sort of playing with the jokey aspect of it, which isn't play wide anymore.
What there is, though, now that there
I don't care what they want. I just want what I want.
You know, but what there is now that didn't exist before is a it's a small audience, but there is an audience for more different types of genre within that genre. Like, you could sort of do a throwbacky book, at least a little bit. Whereas I don't think, you know, 10 years ago there was no place for it.
Which is why I think you see, in addition to the fact that Gary Frank can't do a monthly book, you see him in the back of Justice League, because you can have those stories as a bonus.
Yeah.
This is treading the line of modernizing it, but there are, you know, it isn't really the traditional Captain Marvel we're seeing in these stories anyway. It's a fine line to walk with Captain Marvel more than almost in this. I think Paul's right, more than Superman even. It's that.
You think Alan Moore wrecked it?
No, I don't think he wrecked it. I just think the times have changed.
I think that's it. I think it's a time thing, and he's Justice Society might be the pinnacle for him in modern
ensemble
stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. So
Adam from Louisville, Kentucky writes and says, DC did their New 52. Marvel had started Marvel Now. Rebooting, relaunching, whatever you want to call it. The attempts to draw on new readers. There have been debate whether this has been successful or not. I feel that DC, Marvel, Image, etc. would have had easier time drawing in new readers by using new avenues of advertising. Ads for comics are typically in comics. What is the point of that? To keep comic readers reading comics? Of course we're going to keep reading comics. We're already hooked. What about drawing in new readers? Why not advertise on TV, before movies, billboards, non-comic related websites? For example, seeing an ad for Age of Ultron on a comic book website only serves to remind a current reader not to analyze a new reader. What are your thoughts on this? I feel like only advertising comics within comics is counterintuitive. Well, I mean, they've tried as much as they can, and we'll just get this out of the way now before we get into why they don't do it. But they, you know, Josh did hear an Age of Ultron ad on the radio. Allegedly, I don't know if I believe you 100%, because I've never heard anyone else say they heard one.
I heard it. It was on a local radio station. They advertised on like ESPN or something, I think, recently.
Allegedly, Marvel. This could all have been in your head, because I've never heard anyone else say it. But apparently that happened. They really focused on New Hampshire. They just sort of zoned in on that
Boston,
state.
But.
And then they did some New 52 advertising, you know, not like on TV, but it was in there was a lot of magazine articles about it, which is done through the PR. You know, that's the PR department in DC setting those things up. It was a bunch of mainstream press for the New 52, and from anecdotally from comic stores, that did bring at least lapsed readers back in.
Sure.
Subliminal.
How long
messages.
They stayed is a question, but they did bring them in through this advertising campaign that was low rent. Why was it low rent, Josh?
There is no way to make the return on investment from what TV advertising would cost. In order to reach enough people, it would cost them more money than they would ever make selling comics. It doesn't work. And people always say, well, Marvel owns Disney owns Marvel, Warner Brothers, blah, blah, blah. None of that matters.
Their department has to make a profit.
It's a waste of money. Because, and I do hate to say this, don't think enough people want to read comics. You can put those ads all over the place.
Yeah.
But only a very tiny percentage of people are going to be swayed to go read comics.
It's like Captain Marvel. Times have changed.
Yeah.
There aren't enough latent comic readers. Like,
this is it.
Like the potential comic readers.
In the same way that they don't do, they don't do TV commercials for best-selling books. Because such a small percentage of
they
the
do
audience,
a couple of them.
They do.
Yeah, I know, but just generally, it's the same
mostly
sort of concept,
online
though. But you know, people like that's not their potential audience. It's you're not going to capture them that way, and the money that you would have to put in to get that many eyeballs would never come back.
It's more a P&L scenario than it is. I mean,
radio thing baffles me.
They do advertise big best-selling books a lot on TV, a lot, but. You're talking about an industry with razor thin margins. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole entire, look at it this way. Iron Man 3 in its 2 weeks of release, how long it's been out, worldwide will have generated more profit than the entire comics industry does in a year.
Yes.
So that is why they don't also worry about the comics as much as they worry about the movies.
You threw Image in there. There's no advertising budget for Image. That's not how it works. The people, you know, people do their own comics. They give them to Image to publish. They pay Image a fee of the money that comes.
Well, the fee comes. Yeah, the fee comes out.
The money that comes in, they don't pay it up front. That's not how it works.
I feel like they're already doing the best thing they can do to get the people who would read comics to read comics, and it's keeping those characters in the public consciousness with the movies, because that's what got me reading comics again. Was seeing those early X-Men movies. That's what actually got me interested. But
it's like we're mutants.
I'm not just anybody. I'm a guy. Yeah, I have the X gene.
It's true.
I have that receptor, and I pick up those signals that feel sublime, that just pass over other people who wouldn't just be interested in comics. It's not just that they're not. There are going to be some people that don't know that it's out there and know that they would like it. But more often than not, it's just that there are people that. I don't think there's a lot of them.
I would
out there.
Go so far as to say that comics as they exist now have an incredibly high barrier to entry, meaning that if you are interested in it, that's good. Then you're going to go and you're going to find out how much they are and what you get.
Well, first you got to find where to get them, which is the most important, biggest
right.
problem
you
of all.
That.
The reality is the finances aren't there for advertising, and the way that they get more money out of the industry is to advertise to the people already reading them to read more. That has been their strategy.
And market and build.
That's been their strategy for a long time, is to get you, the comic reader, to buy more comics.
Cling on to the few people you already have. That's about the best they can do.
Which is why you're seeing so many
them dry.
Ads for the comics in the comics, because they want you to buy more comics.
Also, those are unpaid.
Yeah.
You know, those are places that they didn't sell other ads for. So they got to put something. The amount of content that is in a comic book is fixed. And then the amount of spaces they have open. Listen, if they have a choice between putting in a house ad for something or Tide is going to put an ad in there, they'll take the Tide ad. But
so there you go, Adam. There's just no money in TV advertising for comics. Even back in the 80s when they were making more money, they didn't do it then because the money isn't there in print.
Comics
in print.
Comics are not a wheel; they're a carousel. You're just waiting for that right advertisement.
If you have a question or a comment, you can email contact@ifanboy.com, and you can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. In both cases, tell us your name and where you're from. I'm curious if this was the same Sean for both. We'll find out, I guess.
The same Sean did write in an earlier question for the first one. I know that much. So there.
It was a Mad Men joke.
I caught that, and then I came around to bite him in the ass later because he had to sit and watch a slideshow. Anyway, you can listen to the Make Comics podcast. New one came out last week about titles. Thinking about what you should be thinking about when you come up with a title.
Title's the first thing you need, right?
It should be. I wouldn't do it.
Do the title first.
I wouldn't do it. I would think of the title, and then I would hire a person as much as you can afford to design the logo and the title first, and only then start working on the plot.
What's the most important thing? You should spend like 3 or 4 months just on the title and the logo, right?
And also cost wise, you want to look at it sort of like an engagement ring, 2 month salary.
Right.
I think that's the best rule of thumb to go with. No. We will give you helpful and practical advice on creating comics, both from the creative and the realistic business standpoint of the world. Is me and Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, who is professionally teaching you how to make comics, as a former editor from Marvel and IDW. And a writer himself. You can check that out. There'll be another episode soon.
And coming up soon, we have that Talk Explode with Glenn Weldon about Superman, the unauthorized biography. As I said last week, it'll be this coming week, and it's still this coming week. So it's just a rolling this coming week. Now it's coming up. We also have a special edition podcast. I'll be sitting down with Connor and Mike to talk about Star Trek Into Darkness.
That's right. The new Star Trek movie. Me and Paul and Mike, probably the three biggest Star Trek fans on the staff.
Ever? I don't know.
Sitting down to talk about the new movie, the sequel to Star Trek. So this is the second big release. And then in a month, we will have Superman. So this has been,
there will be spoilers.
Be spoilers. So there.
I do not know how to talk about this movie without spoiling it. So, yeah.
So check that out. It'll be on ifanboy.com. Or it'll be on this feed behind this episode. You can find it.
So check out ifanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book stuff and all the important news and discussion topics. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and our social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy. Stay in touch on facebook.com/ you guessed it, iFanboy. The you guessed it is not part of the URL.
Don't put that in there. That won't work.
Don't put that in there.
Page not found. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you do call in for the show, remember to get to your point. Say you have a good question for us. Tell us your name and where you're from, and hopefully we can get you on the show. We can always use good questions. That Shazam question, great question.
Good question. And finally, if you like this show or any podcast you listen to, please go to iTunes and take a few minutes to write a review. Helps people find shows they're looking for. Let's find out these shows they're looking for are any good, if people like them or not. So it really helps. So if you are a fan of this podcast or any podcast, please take a few minutes to do that. We would really appreciate it. And so would everyone who makes a podcast for your enjoyment.
Get a tattoo. iFanboy.com.
Don't get a tattoo.
Don't do that.
Don't. Get one immediately after breaking up with your girlfriend.
Why would that matter?
Well, because you're in some sort of emotionally fragile state.
You
might make a bad tattoo decision. You don't want to regret
like,
it.
I understand, don't get like a tattoo when you're first starting into a relationship. Get the name. Like, Steve
here's what I'm saying.
What
and made that the name of his helicopter.
You might be dating someone, let's say in college.
Okay.
And you might break up.
Right.
And then you might be in an emotionally vulnerable, fragile state because of that breakup. And you decide, you know what? I'm going to get a tattoo of the logo of my favorite podcast or perhaps the logo of a character I like from comics. And I'm going to get that and show her. And then
show her?
Almost immediately you might regret it. No.
In that
it's a hypothetical scenario. Yeah.
You're conflating things.
Okay.
What's this, Gordon?
Hypothetically.
Okay.
It could be that tattoo reminds that person of all the good things of a certain part of his life.
I see.
And in that way, it is still meaningful, and he doesn't actually regret it all that much. But it didn't have anything to do with the fact that, other than a signpost marker of the metamorphosis from one state to another.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have liked, theoretically, to have done that more, but it hurt like a fuckload. And, you know, he doesn't even like getting shots.
I see.
Hypothetically,
might be something one tells themselves to feel better about it.
Hypothetically, you could eat a dick.
That's it for this week's show. I'm Paul.
I'm Connor.
I don't think we were at our best this week.
No, I apologize. We'll be good next week.
Oh, it's Josh's tattoo.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.